Morning. So I am here to introduce our two conveners today. And David Allman is the founder and principal of Wellbeing at Work. And in that role, he's partnered with the Gallup organization, and they have resources to help organizations look at themselves and examine themselves, and also help looking at transforming their organizations in which people can thrive. And Sharon is Senior VP of Human Resources for Magellan RX Management. And she is involved with the Gallup organization and David, and is on this journey on looking at how to transform Magellan into an organization where individuals can thrive. And then on that note, short and sweet, I'll turn it over to David.
Actually, I think good morning to everybody, or good afternoon if that's the case. And I know that Sharon and I are going to be tag teaming. So I know a big part of this is please pause and raise your questions aloud. So, and of course, I always love just calling on people to make sure that I'm not allowing people to fall asleep. So Sharon, I think you wanted to set the table just a little bit for us, right? Just to maybe kind of lay out the opportunity or the problem set that we're working through together.
Absolutely, thanks. So I thought it would be fun first to just understand kind of how the idea came that this is a critical component of how we think about evolution of org design and the work that we do with organizations. So in my role, I have organization development and often work on organization design iterations with our organization. Through that process, we've kind of learned a lot about what we know and what we don't know about trying to stand up an organization to be more future oriented and a kind of ahead of the market. So we've done a lot of action learning. We participated in Star Lab a few years ago with some members, some really kind of founding members of this organization. And in this next understanding of the things that we need to do, it became apparent that there's something very, very real and very influential in understanding how you stand up an organization to establish well-being as a core sense of your design, right? And why you exist and how people come into do the work. So we're kind of in action learning, right? We're experimenting and exploring, and we've actually benefited greatly from having Dave and members of his team partnering with us. Not just from we're in the behavioral health market in parts of our business. Like, what is it that we need to do to support our customers through an understanding of well-being? And that's really meaningful work. I'm actually involved in the partnership from a perspective of how do we design the next iteration of us when well-being is the very loud kind of opportunity, right? It's presenting itself whether we really acknowledge it or not. And so we started to really understand some things, and then now we have this new opportunity. So I'll talk first about what we understood. We understood there's a great deal to leverage in just starting somewhere. So we started with strengths, and we really leveraged that for our leadership team to really start to understand how to optimize each other when we start to acknowledge that we enter a conversation from different perspectives based on our strengths. And we get smarter when we can actually surround ourselves with various diverse strengths, which really plays nicely into a lot of things like intellectual diversity, right? And so we started there. And now, I'm going to share, it's public information, so I'm not sharing anything that I can't share. Our company, Magellan RX, has entered into an agreement to be bought by another entity. And now what we need to do is better understand how to start from a point of well-being in designing the future organization when you have two companies that already exist and very traditional, have followed great practices to date in establishing how to optimize people and performance and deliver on commitments and grow a business. But now we have this new opportunity to create something very new, very different, that could be differentiating in the market. How do we now take everything that we've learned and everything we're very aware of in understanding how to optimize a person through understanding where they are in their ability to be well and their strengths to be, you know, kind of be in the right place at the right time? How do we do that and actually design for it? So to me, that's the compelling opportunity here. And it kind of puts a little pressure on these assumptions we've made before, which is, oh, org development and org design have like their own distinct place in this. And it puts pressure on that, that says they're actually really integrated. And if we can get to the secret sauce of this, we could build something that the two organizations need to build in order to evolve as a combined organization and you know, kind of disrupt the market. So Dave has been an extremely helpful partner in being curious and also the expert on what it is Gallup has learned and all of that data, right? So also fact-based, data-based decision-making is a critically important part of this. And Dave's been just a great participant in that conversation, having all of that good data and information. So I'm really long-winded by nature, so I just took a long time. But hopefully I set the stage for the conversation. What we're really hoping is to have good questions and to share ideas and thoughts as a result of all of us being interested in this topic and having Dave guide us with good data and facts and anecdotes and intellect. So that's the table.
So I'm going to reframe it, but I would love if somebody in their words would also reframe it. So, and I think you all, when I had a chance to meet you, I said, I'm a wannabe like you all. I've just intuitively been doing this for the last 40 years. But this notion of design and development are one continuous thought, as opposed to maybe two separate camps. So that's the first, just that tension. I'm oversimplifying, and I apologize. And I'm going to use the McKinsey 7S model, although in a moment I'm going to show the STAR model. I just have more dexterity with the 7S. But I've always said that the hard factors, which are the top three, things like structure, things like strategy, the hard factors are easy because they tend to happen on paper. And the soft factors, which are things like shared values and truly development of skills, the soft factors are hard because they involve human beings. And there's a bit of, I think, similarity in that idea of design and development, that development's hard, it takes time. And then just maybe to add, and then I'll pause, this notion of development is a green field right now for just about every leader, meaning there's not a lot of expertise to draw from, that we now need to think about the whole person, not just the worker or the employee. And that's a net new green field that for most leaders, and I'm just going to go back to what excites me with what Sharon shared with the M&A, is these are leaders that believe they can have a comparative, competitive, sustainable advantage by bringing two organizations together. They want to do different, but they're not equipped to do different. They're equipped to leverage what got them there, not what's going to get them to the next level. It just seems like that's a petri dish for individuals like yourselves, but also a time to be a student. So somebody, maybe in your words, play back what Sharon's setting up as the opportunity, because to me, it's extremely exciting. So I always love calling on people, but someone just volunteered. In your words, your world, how does it compare? Chris, you are nodding. So like, what are you thinking, buddy?
Oh, me? I'm just, you know, this is so new to me. But I'm just trying to be like a sponge and soaking it up. I guess I will just say, in the way I'm hearing this, is that it's very bi-directional, you know, and that design impacts development. Development also impacts design, especially in the type of labor markets we're seeing around. I think there's just this big shift, this seismic shift to what you're speaking about, where if we don't learn the downstream effect of some of the decisions we make, then it impacts employees, it impacts their well-being, it impacts their productivity, and they're gone, and that costs a lot for the organization. That's really kind of what's resonating or what I'm thinking about.
What do you got, Jim?
I think the you say the hard stuff and soft stuff. Just thinking that they're two different things is the problem. The organization is an amalgam of hard stuff and soft stuff that is rarely designed in an integrated way. If I have an organization, and I'll go back to one of my very first experiences. I was the IT guy on a large on the design of a beer producer in San Francisco Bay Area, and we asked all the questions about how do you make beer and how does the process flow and all of that. And I was sort of, my eyes were glazed over, and I asked the question, so why do you want to create this company? And one of the two founders said, so that we become a pain in the ass to Budweiser, they buy us and we all become millionaires. And I said, okay, then let's stop talking about brewing beer, because that's the easy stuff. Let's figure out how to design an organization that will dissolve itself in a very short period of time and yet become credible enough so that it becomes a pain in the ass to Budweiser. It all turned out to be the soft side stuff. So let's hire people from the get-go, informing them that we do not plan to be around. We plan to sell ourselves in 3 years. Is that a company you want to work for? In the process of that, we want to become the best craft brewed beer in the San Francisco Bay Area. And we want every bar to be selling it and every hotel to be selling it. It's a different approach to organization that forces the development, the design, the talent management, the operations management, and the leadership model to be integrated. So if wellness, you know, if well-being is important, then part of that is starting way back at hiring people who want to be part of that organization and to live its values and fulfill its purpose. But that's not what people get recruited for when you read the ads. They get recruited for their ability to do taxes, for their ability to brew beer, clean floors, whatever it might be, but not to have that, I'll call it, social fit to the organization that removes the drudgery of work from the well-being equation.
So I see that Steve's got his hand up, David.
Please, Steve. But I just as a transition, Jim, I can't help myself. So was it a hoppy ending?
Oh.
Okay, sorry.
No. Well, it was. They overachieved, and they actually became so profitable and so popular that they remained the number one. They remain today the number one brewer, craft beer brewing company in San Francisco Bay Area.
Beautiful. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. I'm also a wannabe comedian, and you can see I need to stay in the former. Design. Steve, what do you got for us? And then I want to show a couple of visuals because I think it may set some framework for us. Steve?
So as Jim was talking about intentionality and like designing from purpose, what I started to think about is, does a company set up, is one of their missions to serve employees in such a way that they can be well working in that organization? Or do they view well-being as serving kind of the mission of being a successful organization in whatever ways they measure that? And maybe it's not an either or, it's a both and, but that's kind of what I'm stirring over as we're thinking about how does org design and org development serve the well-being of people within an organization?
I'd like to show, so that's a great setup, Steve. I don't have a one-liner that tops Hoppy yet. I'd like to show three visuals that I think kind of, well, it'll stimulate some conversation, which is the intent. So Sharon, is it okay if I just show a couple things here?
Yeah, quick, absolutely.
That we had talked about, okay. Let's see, I think I can. All right, anything that I'm sharing, you are welcome to use, so that's important. I would ask that you always give the full attribute to Gallup, because they're being so generous and just allowing us to be part of these conversations. Steve, back to being intentional. I'm going to use vocabulary that I use every day that resonates well. If some of that vocabulary is foreign, I'd encourage you to think about how you might include the vocabulary in your conversations with others. So I'm going to speak to, and I think I mentioned it quickly, so I'm going to go a little slower. It's this idea of creating a fully optimized environment. So what is a fully optimized environment? And if we start with the idea, and I think Jim, you said it, a human system, if we think of the most complex system, it's a human being. A human being is a system that has all kinds of interdependencies, ultimately has an operating system. And of course, no two human beings are the same, unique as snowflakes. And of course, if the operating system is unique, we need to serve them uniquely. And so when we think of this idea of a fully optimized environment, we're getting somebody into a fully optimized state. There's three questions that we can ask. And the key here is, if we start with the end in mind with the three questions, go back to Sharon, we've got great leadership coming together, wanting to do something new and different, but they're both part of something that has historically got them there. The first question to be asking individuals, and again, this is a Likert scale, 5 strongly agree, does my organization care about my well-being? And the key there is overall well-being, not just workplace well-being. So, and here's what we know as Gallup, as of the end of the month, only 24% of employees today strongly agree that their organization cares about their well-being.
So, hey, Dave. Hey, Dave. I'm sorry to interrupt here, but your sound is getting really tunnel-y.
Okay.
I don't know if you're using a headset or.
No. All right. That's not good. Let me try to drop this camera. Is that any better? No. No better?
We have to hear you talk a little more to know. Okay.
Well, if I don't talk, it's much better, right? Okay.
better.
All right. Sorry about that. So the first question that we want to ask, if you will, individuals is, my organization cares about my well-being, and we're seeking 5, strongly agree. The second question, and again, from a design perspective, I think we can work backwards, is I'm encouraged to use my strengths every day. So in the workplace setting, there's a recognition of what my strengths are. I just want to give an example. So for Dave, myself, my number one strength is maximizer. I see the good, my natural instinct is to make it better. My number two is learner. Learn about people, learn from people. So learner, I'm a sponge, like Chris said. I'll stop at number 3. My number 3 is futurist, trying to see around the corner, but not so far out that I can't hopefully connect and bring others along. And so the point is that if I'm in an environment where I'm encouraged to use my strengths every day, they're just naturally my superpowers. They're abundant. I'm just more, again, it can be studied. I'm in the zone much more often where I lose a sense of time and I'm just more productive than I would be otherwise. So the question being asked of any audience, any group of employees is, am I encouraged to use my strengths every day? Which then says, do they even know what my strengths are? Or do I even know what my strengths are? And you know, without an objective way to kind of ferret those out, we intuit our strengths. Someone's probably asked you before, what are your strengths? And, you know, without the discipline, I would just ramble. You know, I think I'm a smiley person or whatever the case. So the key there is starting with the end in mind, getting the answers to that. And then the last, and this goes back to Steve, the idea of on purpose is, does my work matter to me personally? And does the sense of purpose that it matters to me align with what matters to the organization? And the key is when a person can answer strongly agrees to all three, they're in an optimized environment, which is putting them into an optimized state. So I'm going to pause, but I am suggesting from a design development in all of your toolboxes, this is a very easy scrappy dog way of getting a sense of where they are, which then gives you a whole new level of whole person insight as it relates to how we think about design development. So Sharon, I think here's also probably, you know, as you're exploring the white space here with the M&A, how this ties together, but this is a new frontier for their leadership.
Yeah, actually it looks like Mike McGovern has a comment.
This sounds like the work of Chitsun Mali, that whole idea of being in the zone and being in flow. So I really like how this whole idea of optimization blends to flow and then designing around that idea. It's a great, great concept.
I do think it absolutely lends itself to that concept of flow. I think what makes this kind of really intriguing from my perspective is that there's data proving not just that flow is a cool thing, that people do better work and all the kind of anecdotal concepts around it, but actually proves the direct correlation to organization performance. And for me, it made me more aware of, like, you know, designing jobs that we know are mundane and then making sure we intentionally select folks who want mundane because it speaks to how they want to exist in their flow, right? Some people want mundane, but not everybody. So, like, let's make sure that we're designing the work and the around the people, right? And what gives them flow. And that's a really simplified and it's probably overly simplified example, because I think there's far more complexity to this than just designing a different job than mundane or knowing who likes mundane. It's far more complicated than that. But this gives us actually insight into data that can take the complexity of it into, like, actionable areas instead of anecdotal.
So, by the way, Sharon, top three traits that relate to mundane will be disciplined. When it's somebody's strength, they love routine. By the way, achiever, wants to knock things down and feels as if, you know, Lucille Ball's watching cupcakes go down the line. She, you know, we're happy. Another one is arranger, is making sure everything is in rows and columns. I mean, if we know what the strengths are, that's giving them the comfort. That wouldn't work for Dave Allman. I mean, I need a blank sheet of paper with, you know, barely fences of a playground. But to the point of data, this could be, you all could start doing this tomorrow in a very non-scientific way with a survey, right? Just to start asking these questions. because then it's peeling back the onion. But here's the data to support it. And you know, if when someone answers they strongly agree to that, to the three questions, right now, only 7% of the workforce is in a fully optimized state. So that's Gallup. And here's what's interesting. This is comparing, I strongly agree to all three, a five, and this is really important. Fours, threes, twos, and ones, all are the same value. So, you know, this goes back to trickery and engagement studies. It's just strongly agree. Everything else is just, you know, the noise. This is the relative comparison of someone that answers all fives versus someone that answers anything less than all five. So the way to read this is when I'm in an optimized environment or an optimized state, I bounce back from personal and work-related hardship 80% faster. I believe my team is performing 300% better. So we get the halo effect of team performance. Oh, by the way, I believe I'm thriving, and well-being is a subjective assessment of what matters to me and the experiences that I'm having. You know, as an example, I'm 90% less likely to leave my job. So there's real dollars and cents connected with those three questions. So Sharon, I'm just kind of setting up the data and the evidence to support it. But this idea of an optimal environment, executives love to lean into that because it sounds competitive, but we're now approaching it from a very human perspective as opposed to maybe a traditional. Sorry, Sharon.
No, I was just going to say, and this might fit into the conversation in a different place, but I feel like it fits here, where understanding that connectivity then that we said earlier between development and design. You and I had talked in earlier conversations about what happens when you organize and you design a structure where this like top level position is someone who's project manager oriented, who's really good at making sure things get done, who's like that tactician and the arranger kind of strength, right? And then underneath that, you design that the position underneath that would be the person who is looking to the future, maybe a product developer or you know, kind of someone setting strategy for the organization, but the key leader is the operator, but someone needs to be looking at opportunities in the market, and they're really innovative and they're whiteboard oriented and need to think from scratch. If you design that, you've sub-optimized both individuals because the strengths are not complementary without development, where they then can become together a balance for each other and actually accelerate each other's ability because of the strengths being so divergently different. So that to me is where this design component and this development component kind of come together. And then when you ask those questions, people can say, this is the right work for me. I, you know, my company cares about me. Like all of those things can be said in the affirmative, the strong affirmative. And then you have that zone, that flow. And that's where we actually accelerate someone's ability to take the organization beyond where they are today versus get stuff done today.
And Chris, you had something in the chat that I thought it might be helpful to share with others.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and this actually has recently kind of come up to the conversation. I think this is really part and parcel with a study a few years ago by Stanford that was looking at kind of drivers of burnout, drivers of recruitment retention issues. And they found, and I think your research and what's being shared supports this, is that 80% were not related to the employee, but were related to the quote unquote system. Now they're not org design professionals or HR professionals, but they're clinicians looking at this, and they suggest that 80% is related to the system they find themselves in. Things like workload, things like autonomy of their role, things like the question that came in, you know, being micromanaged and just things like that. I thought it was really interesting. I'll see if I can find it, pop it in the chat box.
I actually love the chat that's also occurring here, Wesley. And Lauren, to your point, right, this does actually challenge us on something that we've all said, we've not just done or been told, right? Design for the work, right? Design for what you need to achieve, design for the objectives, keep the names out of it. And in this case, we're saying that maybe it's not the names or the faces today, because maybe it's an unknown, but be intentional about appreciating what the dynamic is when you bring the name in and you bring the face into it. And that's the piece where the development then and the design becomes so much more integrated in the strategy, in the execution, and the like go forward from there. Do you agree with that?
So when I ask this question, I guess I'm wondering, like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? What comes first in? Are we thinking about what types of strengths we might need to fulfill an org design? Or are we thinking about the individuals and their development first? I see a tension.
We're starting with a green field. Or we're, you know, if I think of an M&A, the acquisition was easy, it's now the merger. If I know what people's strengths are, and I am focusing on what's right about people as opposed to, oh God, he drives me crazy. So part of this is, Lauren, I think, what are we starting with? If we have people, they're human beings with human systems, they're unique, we need to spend a little bit of extra time. I mean, when I think of my team within Magellan, the two people that are my go-tos are almost exact opposites, but they're arrangers, they get shit done. And I'm so excited to have them in a meeting. Had I not been sensitized to the strengths, I would have said, this is just, oh my God, I don't have time for this. Like, you know, you're killing me. So I think it's an and, Lauren, is how I'm, I mean, we don't have the luxury of always having a greenfield, right?
I think about it as making the puzzle 3D, right? In that it's not, so you certainly have to, like, as you design the work to be done, certainly would still design, and then you have to figure out decisional structure that informs kind of, you know, how you'll make decisions together, and maybe there's a hierarchy around it. It's when you start to plug people into it, it's building the strategy around how to enable the success based on the makeup of the strengths, and even understanding kind of, is this group highly engaged? Are they at the optimum of well-being? Or do we need to do, like, we also need to then include in development some things that help this team come together in support of each other's well-being, in addition to supporting each other's work or as part of each other's work. So it, to me, it's about understanding that the puzzle's now more 3D, and in that definition, there's more to do than to simply pick who goes in which box after we've designed how the boxes are arranged together, right? It's about how do we enable success, and it almost makes the reporting structures kind of more of a challenge, right? Like we always talk about, like, how do you optimize a matrix? Because there's always, like, dynamic in a matrix, right? So this, to me, makes it easier if we're leveraging this information and this data to optimize whatever the design is once you put people into it.
You look at the STAR model, what occurred when Craig and I and Sharon and Tanya were preparing for this, if I was to look at any one of these elements and within that ask the three questions, my organization cares about my overall well-being, I'm encouraged to use my strengths every day in my job, and my work matters to me, I think we'd end up thinking and acting differently for each of these five elements. And that would be maybe a subtler way to start just thinking about the design and development, because we're just more cognizant of the overall person. And I'm not taking away from this model, but you really have to dig deep as you just look at the labels and the descriptions to see, where is the human being coming out in this? This is a workplace model. And, you know, so I think there's an X there's like rows and columns intersecting what we're talking about in each of the five elements. And then there's big X, little X in terms of those points of intersection that can be some low hanging fruit in terms of how we can advance that conversation. I did have another visual, but Sharon, I think you want to go to a different place, or what are you thinking?
Well, I was actually really thinking that the intent was for this to be action learning. And so I wanted to pivot with the group and then say, as you think about this concept, how would you envision this influencing the work that you do? Like, does it influence the work that you do? Do you anticipate that this is something that, you know, some folks have said this is a just-in-time conversation. Do you anticipate that you are already looking for something new and different in how we organize and arrange to get work done? And like, is there a way that you would contemplate that you would bring different data into the conversation, different data into the assessment of where you are today, right? We start to, like, you have your objective and then you have all this data collection that you do. What do you envision this might trigger for you?
So I'm new to org design and org development, and I actually don't have an explicit role in those fields, but I'm interested just to ask the team I am a part of these three questions and get a sense of, like, where is our team at in this? And my assumption is that, although I would want to check it out, is like, we'll see some stuff about how our team is working that correlates with what the answers are to those questions at the individual levels. So really interesting thinking about how the individual experiences tie into that kind of team system and into the larger system for me.
Do you see your team as perhaps a microcosm of the larger organization that you can test things out in?
Oh, I totally think what the system does one way is how it does everything. So I wholeheartedly believe that our team would be a microcosm for what's being experienced across subsidiaries and other teams.
Yeah.
70% variation of a team's performance is directly within the control of the manager and the continuum between boss and coach. 70% of the overall performance, just time in, time out, is what we find as Gallup. So, Steve, it will be fun as you test that and then kind of pressure test that with the people that are in the role of leading, regardless of hierarchy from the very top to lots of layers in the middle.
Wesley, did you have a
comment? Wesley, did you have something you wanted to interject?
Yeah, hi. Hi, I'm Wesley. I work for the government. So it's a little bit different world, but you're really, thank you very much, because you're really sparking some things that I could do. One of the things is I put in the chat, it's like I end up getting involved in a lot of these roles that have been just sort of kludged together and then having to stop or trying to stop the leader and help them think about, okay, wait a minute, you have now created this camel that let's stop and think about how that's going to play out in the future, and bringing strengths into that conversation. And I'm also wondering, I've got some groups that I have a lot of lawyers, but I have some groups that are kind of homogeneous in that way. And I'm kind of thinking, okay, could I do something around identifying people that are perceived as being high performers, figuring out how they're feeling about those three questions? Because I think one of the biggest challenges I have is coming into this from the private sector, realizing that benefit is just, I mean, I'm used to working with, okay, we've got a sales goal. We've got a, you know, we've got some sort of identifiable performance goal here. But I think that, I know I'm rambling now because I'm just ideating, but I think that somehow trying to figure out the connection between people's feelings of wellness through those three questions, and then some element of performance as it exists in my world might be kind of an interesting way to kind of start getting into that.
I would love to help explore that with you and just kind of connecting to maybe it's more cause-based instead of maybe metric sales. You know, you use the sales goal as an example.
Yeah, and it just real briefly, one of the challenges we have is I work for the Department of Justice, tremendously mission-based people. I mean, we got that going on all over the place. But trying to figure out how do we retain and sustain those folks, and what does that mean for us as an organization? Yeah.
We're doing some work in the private practice with large law firms, and you know, there's usually a cause or a strong mission, whether for profit, you know, mission or margin. There's usually some similarities there, maybe slightly different vocabulary. It'd be fun to explore that with you. I think there's a couple other though. You're asking the application, Sharon. So let's keep going there, and then I want to make sure I show one visual as a takeaway, maybe, but.
Well, let's go ahead and do that.
Back to being intentional around the word well-being, and you know, it's a pretty popular term right now. And think of this as kind of the well-being journey that an organization could be on. But you know, think about the STAR model in terms of kind of the part of the tool set. But if we think of the journey and where is the organization in that journey. So where are they today? Where would they like to be? Again, just back to the conversation to get people to lean in, you know, well-being at its floor is really just more emphasis moving from wellness to well-being. And what that says is the promotion of things like your existing medical coverage and, you know, making sure people know services like an employee assistance program are available. That next level of growth then is to say, let's start investing in the individual. So we can think of mindfulness. We can think of starting to focus on self-care. So again, put on our own oxygen mask before we try to help others, but that self-care isn't in vain, but it's absolutely essential. When we then take it to the next level, it's where we start connecting the dots, where we're looking at the whole person. And now we're starting to say it's personal development and or personal improvement and professional development as part of the same conversation. So what you're seeing on the left-hand side is just the types of initiatives or investments or outcomes we're trying to achieve. When we continue that journey, we then get to what we've been talking about, which is we're really trying to create the optimal environment that allows us to have optimized employees. And what we know there is engagement numbers go through the roof, which directly then contribute to things like productivity, presenteeism, and ultimately results, retention, et cetera. The end game, that end game is when we truly have this sense of my personal value proposition aligns with the employee value proposition, meaning purpose is directly connected. I feel my organization is contributing in the community where I live and society at large. And of course, you know, for large global companies, that ultimately anchors in the idea of, you know, ESG. What are we doing from an environment, social, and governance perspective? I only show this because most people are stuck in well-being in like the first two rungs, as opposed to recognizing it is the fast path to the DNA of a sustainable environment going forward, since all bets are off on the contract between employee and employer. You know, I've cited DAOs now, thanks to you all. And when I attended back in, I didn't know what a DAO was, but if with a DAO, there is no friction for people to come and go in terms of who they choose to work with. So again, I'll pause. I'm sorry, one last thought. You're going to see this in the next 24 months in a big way. You know, we tend to say, what are an individual's competencies? You know, think on a resume. So, you know, it's project management, it's risk management, it's financial modeling. You know, think of just normal competencies. You will see a competency called well-being, where people want to become certified in well-being. just like you're a project manager that's being certified. We're promoting that. You'll start seeing some major announcements, but literally people will start hiring to say, does this individual have the competency and credentials to know what well-being is in terms of self-awareness, self-care, and the methods and tools to, you know, so either they're going to expect it or they're going to have it as a credential. That's a totally different way of thinking about what used to be wellness and, you know, let's get off the couch and exercise. So I'll pause. Mike, you're smiling. What are you thinking?
Great comment here.
Well, I'm thinking, looking over my life experiences at work and seeing where it worked and where it didn't work and some of the underlying ideas that you're sharing with us today and how they played into that.
Hey, Dave, I'll toss something out. You know, just seeing this slide and the whole conversation, it's having me reflect. You know, we live in a very, most of us, very individualistic, you know, culture and focus, and self-care is a hot word. But this really is there's a social process, you know, element to this. And so I appreciate, you know, this conversation that is kind of, we got to meet the person where they are. There's a person element, but then the system, right? And the study that was cited on the Stanford burnout. So I just love the notion of how do we bring the collective into this individual conversation. And I think Sharon, you said it, even as I work with leadership teams, I'm thinking they got to ask each other, you know, how are they supporting each other? And you know, that's part of a high performing team conversation, but maybe not from a well-being. So I just a thought on that, but appreciate the sharing.
That's a great comment, Joel. And I would say there's a lot that we've talked about around this too, right? So A team leadership, right? The team you're on is your A team, and the team you lead is, you know, your A1, right? Is that whole support of your peer group. I think the interesting thing from my HR perspective is this box in the middle, this brown box in the middle. This has a design component to it, right? And then a development component to it. Well-being for professional development really is like, when you think about certification, how many have worked in an organization here where managers are not well-equipped to be a professional career coach? But we've decided they should be, right? We haven't developed them in order to be, nor held them accountable for it. It's not in their goals. We've not said you must career coach your employees 4 times a year. So there's a design element to this, and like the job of leader, in order to enable this going beyond, to Joel's point, it being very individualistic to being community oriented. Mike?
Yeah, I'm looking at the well-being for professional development, and I was worked for an oil company at the time, and I didn't really feel comfortable that I was bringing my full self to the job. There used to be a program called Managing Personal Growth, and it was a remarkable program in that it offered a structure for both the employee and the manager to explore the values that drove optimization from the employee's point of view, so that became self-evident in the conversation between the manager. So the employee filled out something that revealed something about themselves that included values, work preferences, certain skills and talents. And the manager had an opportunity to see that, and it structured the dialogue to really hit this well-being for professional development square on the head. It was a very, very good program. I don't know if it's still out there, but I found it enormously helpful.
Sharon, as you can imagine, I have another visual that may be helpful. What I'm hoping out of these are, again, visuals you can use in your conversations, vocabulary that's intentional, that just help elevate this in what you're doing in your day in, day out. And again, we'll make sure you get these visuals. One thing to keep in mind, just as we look at that well-being journey, and I'm sorry if I'm trying to be very subtle, that the whole reason why I started this 5 years ago and my whole background is systems and software,
at an enterprise level is, you know, there's got to be an integrated platform that allows you to pull this together. Targeted point solutions, and I say targeted there, so, and this isn't a disparagement, it's just a reality, but point solutions that deal with mindfulness or point solutions suddenly becomes overwhelming for the experience for the individual, and it's not manageable for the organization. So, you know, when we think about what's the underlying technology to enable this, we want to be mindful because that's where the scale comes from. So that we actually can evolve, you know, a boss and a manager to a coach, or that we can aggregate and have insights about well-being, about strengths, you know, around things that, that measure engagement. So, you know, behind all of this is technology at scale that takes the science and makes it effortless. So just always be thinking about that, because I don't want it just to be a conversation that you then can't act on. I only show this because then it's just, hopefully it's, you know, when we talk about what's that journey and how do we get there quickest, you know, we're anchoring on three things: clarity of purpose. And that clarity of purpose has to be personal purpose aligned with organizational purpose. That commitment, and this is, you know, commitment is when a leader is modeling, and when they're leading by example, they're showing vulnerabilities of their own learnings. That's very different than just leading a message, but leading as a human being and showing their own vulnerabilities. Right now, society is desperately calling for that. And, you know, leaders have the least amount of burnout. Middle management has the highest, no surprise. So leaders still have it good because they're making more than enough money to comfort themselves. And, you know, so all the things we know. But that commitment is truly being vulnerable. And then that champion is really the idea of advocating for and modeling. And so, you know, creating champions is a lower bar than creating coaches, is what I'm going to suggest. And there's a lower bar that's out there. And when there's champions in the hallways, it just gets sticky. This is our model of how we're scaling so there's the high tech part, which is our platform, but the high touch, which is the human component, is anchored in just these three simple words. So, and that's all about converting to value as quickly as possible. I'm going to stop sharing the screen. And
Dave, I have a question for you and others as well, Sharon as well, as you'd like to comment on this. Where are the points of leverage when you're going in and trying to create this kind of organization? Is it at the supervisor level, based upon everything we know about employee engagement and full utilization? Is that a key leverage point? Where does this thing find its footing and get traction in an organization? What are some of those leverage points?
So I'll go ahead and answer that first, and then would love everybody else to think about what they would anticipate. But this has been kind of part of how I address all the work that comes through. There's always a vulnerability or a need. And if you can start where the business is most in need, you can then grow beyond it. But so it really depends on where the business is, on its kind of readiness to reevaluate or reassess and in order to make a change. So in some cases, they see it as one very specific thing. So you step into that and then you help expand the view based on like meeting the need that was easily identified by those leaders, and then kind of expand and say, but you know, we could do all these other things. And it helps then kind of real time solve an immediate issue that was top of mind. And then it opens the door for others. So I tend to do that just by observing the organization, and you can see vulnerabilities and you can see opportunities from what it is that crosses the HR desk, to be honest, and then lean in and say, I think we have a solution here. So like for me, the aha was if we could just next, right? We started with strengths because we had a need to kind of help some leaders get beyond where they were to something new. And strengths was an impetus for that. And then we were able to open up the conversation to something more, and we're getting really into the design components now. In the deeper parts of the organization, it's this manager as coach opportunity. And we'll start there and then expand in, and these things will come together over time. Because it's more organic to the work and what's top of mind for the business leaders and the partners that you're creating. If you can kind of get into the issue with them and use this, and then it opens up for more.
So Sharon, it sounds like you might first encounter it as a leverage point for a very specific issue.
Right.
It might be time bound, that might be more narrower in scope, but that the mm-hmm. idea would be then is you would help the leaders expand the frame of reference to see a broader picture as well and look at the full set of opportunities that might be available.
Perfectly said.
Thank you.
That was perfectly said. As far as the quick win, Sharon, I just, and Steve, you know, you said you're going to go do it. I encourage and get ready for the response. Just ask those three questions. Get those three questions on the table, and it will suddenly change the dialogue, because people won't really understand what's behind the onion to get to the next level. Well, you know, by the way, when we asked the question within Magellan, my organization cares about my well-being, they were not very good scores. And mm-hmm. and we're in the business of caring about people. It doesn't, by the way, my manager cares about my well-being is very different than my organization cares about my well-being. And the organization is a perspective bottom line to the 7 plus or minus 2 chairs at the top. I mean, it is a very good lightning rod. So, you know, start simple. It can be scaled and it can get sophisticated, and we can mix and match, and we can marry it down to one manager's performance versus another in terms of optimal state. We can go as fast as you want with the data, but start simple with those three questions. Mm-hmm.
So Dave, I think that is a good closing point. We're at the top of the hour, and I certainly want to be respectful of people's time. And I'd like to thank you, David, and you, Sharon, for taking the time to help tee up the questions and help us with this conversation. And these sessions aren't designed to solve a problem. They're really designed to just have some conversation and stimulate some of our thinking. And we have a number of other sessions coming up in the next couple months. So I'd like to thank your participation and would invite you to join us in future sessions.
I'm happy to hold the line open for a little while if y'all want to, you know, anybody wants to stay on. But just what we did want to recognize that we know we're at the top of that hour being.
So thank you all. It was really great to have you in conversation with us. Really appreciated all of your insights. And by the way, Dave, there are a few pockets in Magellan, RX, where those scores were really good.
No, I was making a broad statement.
Thank you. Okay, bye all.
Thank you.